Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 16th of December, recording at 9:23 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick review of the week. In stock markets, it's been mostly weak, and we have seen the bigger stock markets of the bigger Asian economies fall sharply. That's China and India. We've seen a considerably steadier performance once again from the ASEAN stock markets, which have mostly ranged. In Europe, we have seen a bit of weakness, some retracement of the late November to early December rally, but a little less volatility. And in the Americas, we've really seen the same. Now, just to mention, today we had some slightly better performances. One of the better ones was Hong Kong, up 1.43%. The the Shanghai A-share index had an upward dynamic in the form of a key day reversal after a steepening decline for a number of weeks. More on that. And we have seen a little bit of steadying here today in the U.S. market, but very, very slight. Up 0.5% on the NASDAQ, 0.32% on the S&P. Long-dated government bond prices have been very steady, near the higher side of ranges. That means yields are low. That's been the case pretty much all week as stock markets fell back. We've had something of a bloodbath in commodity markets. Precious metals were hit very hard this week, falling every day save today, and we've seen a bit of a bounce in here. Gold has closed up, I think we're still getting late trading. It's $1,598.40. So that's up nearly $28. And we've seen silver up 40 cents to $29.67 here today. A little steadier in the platinum and palladium as well. The industrial metals are also a little bit firmer. Copper getting quite a good bounce in here. Up over 9 cents to $3.36. And energy prices, importantly, have fallen back sharply. Brent down to 103, fallen all week, and down to 103 and change here. And the WTI crude is just below $94. Now, agricultural commodities have mostly been soft in here. Okay, so what's going on overall? Well, there are two major and related, or not unrelated, factors. And the first is global deleveraging. That is something that's been with us for quite a while. That's something that follows these credit crises. And it's something that we have really been seeing since 2008 in fits and starts. And it's something that we're likely to see for a while longer yet. And the area where we see that most readily is looking at the commodity markets, and that's where many of the inflation problems had flared up. But if you look at that continuous commodity index, the CCI, as it's called. You can find it in the chart library under CCI, and I post it regularly, at least once a week. That was hit hard in here this week. That is a sign of deleveraging. It's also a sign of slower GDP growth overall. And really, that's a pretty big story. We have slowing growth in the growth economies. Now, those are what most people call emerging markets. I refuse to call them emerging markets any more, except for purposes of identification, if people don't know what I mean by the growth markets. The reason for that is obviously that so many of them are well beyond emerging. And they are the growth engine for the global economy, but that growth is actually slowing. And what we are also seeing, though, fortunately, is some changes in monetary policy within Asia to counteract that, as they see some inflation pressures coming down and growth slowing overall. But of course, the inflation is usually a lagging indicator, so you get the growth, the slowing first, and it's a little bit of a dangerous situation. I've been quite concerned. If you've been listening to these audios on a regular basis, you'll know this. I've been quite concerned that the two big countries and biggest countries in Asia, China and India, were going to hold off for too long. It's not a question of wait until you see the whites of their eyes before firing the monetary easing bullets, as it were, because that can be too late. They do need to anticipate, and the one country that did anticipate among the growth economies is Brazil. And not surprisingly, it's had the best stock market performance as a consequence of its four interest rate cuts, and I think that's helped to stave off the risk of recession or continued growth recession. My biggest concern is India, and I think the governance there has been, it's been pretty abysmal. I think just about everything that could have gone wrong with India this year has gone wrong. I have a brief theory. I don't want to digress too much on this, but I think maybe the Indian politicians and officials, bureaucrats, some of the business community believed all the positive comments that so many of us were making about India a few years ago. Those comments and that optimism still applies in terms of the longer term, but India has fumbled badly. And well, you know all about that. It's been a story that we have not been shy about pointing out. And the Reserve Bank of India announced today, for instance, that it was ending its tightening policy. Well, what a relief, because they're not going to take rates any higher following the 13 hikes, quarter point hikes that we have seen for over a year. But I think the market was, well, I know the market was disappointed because it fell, and my feeling is they need to cut and to push aggressively for growth. And then, of course, India also disappointed earlier in the week by suspending discussions on the introduction of supermarkets, for overseas supermarkets in the country. So a little bit of a mess there. But to just step back and look at that big global picture overall, we see slowing growth in the growth economies. So, and that's the engine for the global economy. The U.S. has done a little bit better than it had done previously. In other words, we did not go into the double dip recession that so many economists had forecast earlier in the year, but the growth is pretty paltry overall. But it's just enough to be lowering that unemployment here a little bit, and It's also helping Wall Street by staying out of recession. Bear markets are much steeper when we get the actual recessions. And so far, the U.S. has not slipped back into recession. However, many of the European economies have, and that's really the soft spot in the global economy. And of course, Europe is the focal point of most global concerns, and it is arguably the biggest risk overall. And as many have pointed out, including this service, it's fine to talk about austerity measures. There are going to have to be massive cuts in entitlement programs within Europe because these countries can't afford it. But when you start cutting back on those entitlements, you also cut growth further, and you therefore push the economy into a bigger hole. And you can either devalue your way out of that, which is not an option if you're in the Eurozone, or you are going to experience a very, very severe recession. And that's the prospect now for these periphery European countries. I think it's more than the prospect, it's the reality now for these periphery economies. And there, I would say that the global community has not been particularly reassured by the pace of the various almost constantly running crisis meetings and discussions in terms of solutions to address this problem. But I don't want to be too pessimistic. In here, we have seen yields come down this week in the periphery countries or southern European countries such as Spain and Italy. Owen has reviewed those, incidentally, today, so you'll be able to see that sector in his section of comment of the day. But we have a situation where growth isn't picking up anywhere. I mean, you could say the U.S. is doing fractionally better, as I already mentioned, but that's not that's it would be an exaggeration to say that growth is really picking up there. Now, that's a headwind, obviously, for stock markets, and it is reflected by the fact that most stock market indices are below their 200-day moving averages, and most of those 200-day moving averages turned down earlier in this year, as you know. Now, some of them are doing better than that. We have the ASEAN sector, as you know, and we also have Wall Street, which is doing better than that. But it's still if we take the S&P, for instance, the Nasdaq is slightly firmer and up within its what has been its top area to date. But the S&P is a little weaker overall, has not been able to maintain, it's been able to rally back to the underside of its top area, and it's been able to rally back to that declining MA, but not to break above it. Now, in a best case scenario, that can take time as you get a support building process. And technically, we have higher reaction lows for the S&P and a number of other, well, all the other US indices and also a number of the European indices. In other words, the bear market lows to date, which we feel are probably, and we're certainly hoping that those are the marked the actual lows for the cyclical bear for the stronger economies occurred in September and October, one or two in August. Now, we subsequently had a very powerful rally in October, then, as you know, a retracement in November, and in late November, a higher low was was established. I know it's easier if you look at these on the charts than just following it as I mention it. But that S&P higher low in late November, I think it's just it's at around the 1158 area. Now we're not all that far off that right now. We're at 1220. So 1158, I mentioned, is that November reaction low. And there's little doubt in my mind that sentiment would deteriorate if we were to see that taken out. And that's still a risk. What we need to see for a more attractive scenario for stock markets moving into the or moving towards the new year would be for the S&P and other U.S. indices to push back up above this month's earlier highs and push back up above those moving averages, thus maintaining the higher reaction low on the charts. Now, I don't want to overemphasize that point, but if we net it all out, it's still for the bulls to prove that this cyclical bear phase is over. Again, we've got several weeks, markets have several weeks under their belts without having taken out those September and October lows for the more important markets. And that's a positive indication overall. What's helping them? Well, easy monetary conditions, and that is important. But what we really need to see is the growth. And I think the growth that we can probably count on coming be or being forthcoming is when the growth economies provide a little bit more monetary stimulus. Cut interest rates, cut short-term interest rates, target growth, get that message out within the countries, and that growth will actually pick up. It will occur largely within the Asian region overall, but it will create a little bit more demand for European goods, and boy, do they need it, and a little bit more demand for the U.S. goods, which is certainly also required. But it's really hard to see where any growth is going to come from within Europe right now. And that is a deflationary situation, certainly for Europe, but it also comes in terms of deflationary, in terms of standards of living. But you still have some residual commodity price inflation there. And so we have a stagflation situation here overall. And that has got to be a concern. Okay, now what about these long-dated government bond prices? Well, they, as I mentioned, remain very firm overall, and that is a clear indication that a number of investors are extremely worried about the outcome for global GDP growth, and so they're playing it safe in that sector while they know that the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve and a few other central banks are committed to their quantitative easing programs, which includes supporting those bond markets. The bond markets where the bond vigilantes have taken over, which narrows the scope for quantitative easing on the part of the ECB, is unless it starts issuing euro bonds, or unless the region starts issuing euro bonds. Is in continental Europe, because we have seen earlier the spikes that had occurred in the troubled economies, most troubled economies of the region, and we're seeing now ratings downgrades. Fitch downgraded France's ratings to much angst and chagrin within within that country here today. So that looks like it's going to keep these bond yields where investors know that countries can pay off their debts because they can print money. And that's going to keep those bond yields lower for longer in here. And it's not going to be until we reach that point somewhere down the road where the global economy is expanding across the boards that we're going to see those long-dated government bond yields pick up significantly. Now, what about gold as a hedge against not only all the money printing, but the sovereign debt implosions that people have seen and feared? And as one email that I posted earlier this week put it, that clearly gold is back as a viewed as a risk asset. Well, I'm not sure I would go along. I don't think I definitely don't go along with that fully. But what Owen and I have both said all along is that if you get deleveraging, global deleveraging, inevitably that's going to hit gold at some point. And we've certainly seen that this week, and of course the other precious metals falling as much or more in some instances. And one of the reasons for that is because, as we've known for quite some time, that the major driver behind the gold uptrend was investment demand. That investment demand was coming from central banks in countries that had a significant balance of trade surpluses. Now, those are firm hands overall. But it also included a lot of funds, various hedge funds, and plenty of private investors who were all holding gold bullion and were very happy to do so, so long as the trend was upwards. But if you get investors really being the main influence in that market, you can create instability. All that has to happen is for investors to be frightened or for them to be sufficiently concerned about losses perhaps in other assets that they may be holding, whether that's the value of the house they own or their concerns about stock markets, to cause them to sell their previously best performing asset so that they could at least book some of that profit. And if they see commodities coming down in general, and we certainly have this week, it doesn't take too much imagination for them or anyone else to appreciate that will spill over into precious metals as well. And that's exactly what we've seen. My guess is that we've seen the majority of the sell-off that we're going to see in gold. I think there are eager sellers above the market. I think what we've shaken out really are most of the futures market players. And some of that investment interest, I think, were the price of gold to rally, let's say it rallied $27 in here today, if that were to rally another $50 or so, I have little doubt that there would be a number of people who would start lightening some of their gold holdings overall. So technically, and as you know, this week we saw gold break down from that triangular shape that it's seen break its progression of rising lows. And that certainly changed sentiment. And technically, I think that supply is going to limit rallies in the short term and probably push the gold price lower in the next few weeks, somewhat lower. Could be up to a couple of $100 lower from today's price. Now, if that doesn't happen, it will be because stock markets and so-called risk assets do quite well. For instance, if we were to get the NASDAQ pushing up into new high ground, the S&P moving back up above and establishing itself above its declining 200-day moving average, if we were to get Asian stock markets showing some clear upper dynamics, that would probably raise the floor underneath gold bullion, which is to say, at if we take today's price, which is just under $1,600, I think you've got another $200 risk to the downside, perhaps approximately. Now, on the other hand, if I have underestimated the downside risk in stock markets and underestimated additional deleveraging still in the pipeline, and then we could see gold temporarily fall further than that. Now, the bottom line here is that the deleveraging process continues, and that does weigh on these markets. A mitigating factor is the very low interest rate environment. That's a tailwind, but that tailwind can be relegated to the role of just a factor that cushions downside risk somewhat. Can be overwhelmed, in other words, by the deleveraging pressure as people wish to become more liquid. Now, against this background, there's always a bull market somewhere, and that bull market is still in the autonomies. And they continue to crunch out very good gains overall. That won't go on in perpetuity. But the autonomies, of course, it's a term I coined and have used often in the last 4 or 5 months, refers to these large, successful multinational companies, which have very strong balance sheets and produce where they can do so most effectively and sell where they find the best markets. And Owen has reviewed them on a regular basis. And their technical characteristics are clear overall upward trends and rising 200-day moving averages. And most of them are high yielders, and they include a number of dividend aristocrats. So that's a very attractive sector, and it's likely to remain so for the medium term, I would say at least. I think it's probably a longer term theme overall. I would become concerned if we saw, for any reason, a much bigger sell-off, but that would require not only breaks beneath the late November lows for the U.S. and other leading indices that I've talked about, but also the September and October lows as well. That could suck down the better performing shares, but right now they're still doing well and they're still offering decent yields. The other bull market, there are two others, and one of them is the global bonds, where countries are in charge of their own monetary policy. And those prices remain very firm, so the yields are low. Now, they're not they're not performing as well as the autonomies. They're just quite steady within ranges, but that's obviously a respectable performance overall. And then the third bull market, and I think it's very much in the cyclical category, but the strength is clearly apparent, is in the US dollar. Now, in the past few months, well, most of this year, when stock markets have rallied, that dollar has come under pressure once again. So it's kind of the safe haven, bolt hole money that has supported the dollar. Whether that can gradually morph into a self-feeding, sustained trend remains to be seen. Technically, that's not beyond the bounds of possibility at all. But I but and I would not rule out that possibility at all. But the fact is that throughout most of this year, when stock markets have rallied and when commodity markets have rallied, the dollar has weakened. And it's not the dollar that's been the trigger. It's been the stock markets and the commodity markets that have been the trigger. And the opposite also applies. When the commodity markets and the stock markets have weakened, money has flowed back into the dollar. It's a logical process overall. But if we look at the charts, we still don't have convincing evidence that bulls are back in charge of stock markets. They aren't. Most of these stock markets are still in overall downward trends. Most commodities are currently in overall downward trends, and the dollar is in a medium-term upward trend. What about crude oil? This, I think, is hugely important in terms of inflationary pressures and future GDP growth for the global economy. We got some good news this week when OPEC raised its ceiling. Was that 2 days ago? I wrote about it. And what that did was just to move the allocation up in line with what was already occurring in the marketplace. So it wasn't a net production increase per se. But of course, as we've seen with OPEC over decades, they tend to produce more. The individual states, for the most part, tend to produce more than their official allocation. And so that's opened the door for them to increase production a little bit more if they wish to, and should they be able to do so. And I think OPEC made that move because it was concerned about the recessionary, deflationary forces in the marketplace, and they don't want to see the crude oil market fall back down into the $30 region, as happened in 2008, because of a very sharp recession. So the commodity price set continues, and that's good news overall. What else to mention? Currencies, the euro, I think this is a strong fundamental case for a somewhat weaker euro, but here it is trading today at 1.3040 against the US dollar. I don't think that the euro will collapse, but a somewhat weaker euro would help to mitigate somewhat the deflationary pressures that are very real in the Eurozone here right now. Well, I think that's pretty much a global wrap. I hope I've covered most of the areas that you are interested in, and apologies if I have not. We can get to them next week. Meanwhile, another dramatic week. You probably want to rest. I certainly do. Have a great weekend. All the best.